Suffolk and its churches. Yeah. What kind of things should people kind of know?
Well, Suffolk was one of the most highly dense, sorry, the most densely populated areas of England, sort of in the Anglo-Saxon and Norman period. And in the Domesday Book in 1086, probably something around 450-ish of the 550-ish churches that we now have were already there. So huge numbers of Anglo-Saxon and Norman churches. Of course, in most of our churches, there's very little sign of that, those particular pieces of architecture. One of the problems in building in Flint is that all walls look exactly the same, whether you put them up in a Victorian period or in the Anglo-Saxon period. The only way you can tell the date of it is by the stone carved, which obviously has to be brought into Suffolk from other areas like Barnack and so on, that are carved into windows and doors. And so in some of the churches, perhaps in some of the churches you're going to be visiting today, you may be able to see round semicircular arches, windows or doors that date from the Norman period. Then you get more pointed ones that date from the 1200s, and then they sort of get more decorative in the 1300s, and then they get flatter like these ones in the 1400s.
Clive, who actually built these churches? Were there stone masons who went around doing this?
Yes.
As a group of people, and you spent some time in a village for some years?
Normally the Lord of the Manor was the person who founded the church, which is why in Suffolk, as in many other places, you find that the church is usually next to the site of the hall, even if the hall has disappeared. And, you know, we get all these ideas, you know, well, the church is over there and the village is over here, and it must have been the Black Death or the Plague. Well, it never was. It was just that the person who was founding the church, who was the Lord of the Manor, thought, well, who's not going to get wet on Sunday? I'm not. And that's the very human reason for it being
there.
I guess
if you're putting a lot of money into it, that's one of the perks.
Yes, and of course it would be a community activity. You know, we think of sort of, you know, teams of people building pyramids and so on. We'd imagine the stone collecting that you'd need off the fields for the flints. So, you know, this is a huge community activity. And then you would obviously get specialist builders in to actually do the construction. You'd need stonemasons for the wood, carpenters and so on. But again, many of these, of course, could have been local people. And once the abbey is up and running here in Bury, it, like all big cathedrals today, has got a team of people who are working on the restoration and the care. And, of course, these people can then be, as it were, hired out to other churches, particularly if the places belong to the abbey. And so you find workmen who, particularly in the 15th century, in the 1400s, you can actually identify people who did the work. So in this particular church, we know that there's a man called John Foster who was the master mason. This is his design of arches. And you can go to other places, Thurston, for instance, where the only other place in Suffolk where the windows are actually surrounded by inner arches are St Mary's and Thurston.
Well, it's certainly true. We've talked about that when Clive has kindly come across to talking Thurston. Yes.
There we go. So where else?
Just one other thing. They're such striking structures, and some of them are so large that the engineering quality of this must have been amazing,
because
they didn't have the resources, any sort of technology as such as we have today to put up a building.
You'd have those windlasses.
Remarkable that they built them
get the
so
stuff up
skillfully
to the top,
to such a height and to such enormity.
And of course, the other thing you'll see when you're here in St Mary's and St James's and the other bigger churches is the size of it. I mean, if you just look above, and when you go to the other churches, even if they've got aisles, the arches will only be two-thirds the height of this, because this is just a huge, high-status church. But of course,
and that's part of it. It's a status.
I mean, basically, churches are the size they are because of the size of the population. Because unlike today, where it's a minority of people who will be attending church, then it would be everybody did on Sunday. You only got to scratch two generations back, and it would have been exactly the same, wouldn't it? But so you needed a building that was going to take the entire population of a community. But of course, also there was, on a human level, rivalry between different parishes as to, you know, which of us could love God more by building this wonderful structure.
A little bit when you came to Thurston about Thurston and Ruffham.
Yes. the two bits of the Drury family in rivalry. Yes, and I mean Lavenham and Long Melford as two churches who were being financed by the production of woolen cloth. There's definitely rivalry between them. You know, Lavenham's tower poking further up into the sky than anybody else's, and Long Melford having a lady chapel at the east end, imitating a cathedral with chapels behind the communion table. So there is a human element in it as well.
It's political, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, we want to worship God more than you do, as it were.
I've often thought that some of the large supermarkets and stores are perhaps the similar effigies of this century.
Anyhow, all right, this is where we're intending to go, Clive.
Have you told Nick to come here, by the way?
No, he's going to ring when he's ready to leave the house. Oh, just got back, so I told him to leave. So what we're thinking of doing is visiting the cathedral and perhaps one or two churches in Bury and then going out to Fornham St Martin.
Oh, I was christened in Fornham St Martin, yes.
We should look out for the plaque.
So, now, when you get to Fornham St Martin, as you just go in through the Tudor red brick north porch, as you're just passing the side of the chancel, there's a door to the vestry, and over it is a reused Norman arch, of a Norman arch to a window, and it's got a little zigzag decoration on it. So there's a piece of Norman structure.
We'll try and get a picture. And then we're going up to Timworth because we thought, well, we ought to visit one of the churches, which is off the beaten track, and now not in a village at all.
No, well, of course, there again, it's a hall site very near to it.
Oh, I see.
Don't let them tell you anything about the Black Death because it never is in Suffolk.
Right.
But Timworth's a lovely little church, and it's one of those churches in Suffolk, and there are probably about 26 of them, where the tower isn't at the west end, but is actually on the side, and the tower doubles up, or the lower stage is the porch, and then the tower above it. And there are, as I say, about 26 of those in Suffolk. And it's not an exclusive Suffolk or East Anglian phenomenon, but we do have quite a lot of them here.
And is Timworth one of the churches which is used very infrequently?
No, it's...
Or is it used every Sunday?
Used every Sunday.
Every Sunday, right. Oh, that's grand. And then we're going up to Great Livermere.
Oh, right. So Great Livermere has some really nice... 17th and 18th century features in it. Now, that will be the first church you come to where you've got a double-decker pulpit. If it might be actually a triple-decker, I can't quite remember. But there's a little seat at the bottom, a little box at the bottom for the parish clerk. Then there's another little bit above him for the clergyman to lead the service from. And then he goes up even higher and above contradiction and goes up into the preaching box there. And there's lovely communion rails there as well of the 18th century.
And then we're going to Troston.
Ah, Troston. Now, when you get to Troston, I've just written the guidebook to Troston. Do purchase a copy while you're there.
Right.
at Troston, there's a lot to see, but as soon as you go in, before you go in, there's a beautiful porch. It'll be the first of many wonderful porches you come to that actually is covered in flashwork decoration. It's got the initials of Mary and Jesus across the top. There's a little prayer saying, Jesus, mercy, Mary, mercy. Lots of decoration in flashwork. That's the use of flints. And when you go in, the thing that'll hit you on the north aisle is a whole series of wall paintings. And you've got George and the Dragon, and of course our patron, our real patron saint, isn't St George, but is St Edmund in Suffolk, of course. So there are images of him, and absolutely beautiful. And they've just been restored over the last two or three years. They're really wonderful.
That's a retreat.
I've missed one out. We'll probably go via Ampton, I think.
Oh, Ampton. Okay. Ampton Church has a little chapel on the north side. It now has a war memorial to some of the soldiers who were wounded. Ampton Hall in the First World War was one of those many places, like portrayed in the Downton Abbey series, which was converted into a hospital for wounded servicemen in the First World War, and some of them obviously died there, and there's a memorial in that little chapel to them. But originally it was a chantry chapel for the Cockett family, and there's a little inscription over the top saying pray for the soul of John Cockett and his wife, and it was where a priest would have been employed in the pre-Reformation period just to say prayers for the repose of that particular family. So that'll be the first time you come across a chantry chapel. And there are some lovely 17th century monuments in the chancel.
So we'll go up to Honington.
Yes, now Honington's got, the feature of Honington, again, it's a nice porch, but there's a lovely font in there as well.
Right, and then to Sappiston, which is on its own in the sort of
again, yes, another church on its own. Again, I think Sappiston's not used at the moment.
Right, and down to Bardwell.
Bardwell again. When you get to Bardwell, the thing is to look up into the nave roof. It's a hammer beam roof, the same with hovering angels, very much like we have here in St Mary's. But the difference is that the parts of the roof are actually painted, and it's one of the few roofs in Suffolk that were actually painted in the medieval period. And one of the angels holds a book, and it actually has the date on it in Roman numerals. And I think, having not prepared this, I think the date is something like 1421. And underneath it, on the north side, there's a wonderful piece of stained glass, and it has, I think he's Sir William de Bardwell kneeling, again, he is probably the person who had paid for the roof.
Sir William de Bardwell, you've got the very English name, William there, and then the de.
Yeah.
Which is a matter of a kind of Norman influence.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely, because yes. Normal French would have been, earlier generation would have been the legal language.
Yes.
And then we're going to the two churches in Stanton, the ruined church.
St. John's, the lovely ruined church.
Yes.
And All Saints, the church that's being used at the moment. All Saints was famous in the pre-Reformation period for having a statue of St. Parnell or St. Petronella. Stanton All Saints was one of those churches within living memory. The tower at Bilston fell down. Well, in the early 19th century, the tower at All Saints fell. And there are lovely photographs in the Edwardian period showing the tower just collapsed. But again, you'll see
it rebuilt. Abandoned church. Well, that's, again, we shouldn't be seduced by stories of plague.
It was just two separate manors, or two separate lords of the manors in Stanton, like in Trimley, as in Icklingham, who decided that they'd have their own church. Go down to his church, we can do better. Yeah. So somewhere like Stanton has got two churches, one of which is now redundant and actually roofless, whereas in Icklingham you have two churches, one of which is redundant but maintained as a living building, as it were.
Well, there are plenty others, Clive, but if we just talk about a couple of them, Walsham, we'll go to Walsham if the legs are still going.
Okay, yeah. Walsham has lovely flush work on the outside, lots of initials and so on the clerestory, and inside, the rarest thing, the only one example of this in Suffolk, is what's known as a Virgin's Crant, or crown. And there's you'll see hanging from an iron bracket in the nave, there is this little shape in wood, and it's actually in memory of a virgin who died. I think it's in the 17th century, but it'll have a date on 16 something or other. It was a way of putting up a memorial to her, and the maidens of the village were supposed, in perpetuity, to actually put a little sort of wreath on the top.
And what was the word used? Crant.
Crant. It means crown.
Oh, I've not heard that.
And then we visited Langham before, again out on its own.
Oh, yes. And Langham has Langham is a lovely little church, mainly rebuilt in the Victorian period. It doesn't have a tower. It once had a sort of a bell cot, a la East Burgholt in the churchyard. But what it does have is part of the medieval rood screen. And I think if you go into the chancel and look back at it, you'll see this wonderful carving along the top where there used to be the walkway or loft across the top.
Right. And then we want to pop into Hunston, because we were very taken with how they were managing the other congregation which had appeared there, which were the bats.
Yeah, extraordinary.
Yes.
Covered in plastic.
Yes, I mean, this will bring in letters to Radio Suffolk, no doubt. There is the position within the ancient buildings that are places of Christian worship where the bats take precedence. where you know if building work has to happen in the church, it has to be to suit the life cycle of the bat. And if you happen to have a church with bats and swallows, then you have a window of about a fortnight when one aren't at it and the other, you know, in between before the other lot start, when all the building work can take place. And of course, they do just cover the church in crud,
they do, yes.
And everything has to be covered over.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And then
I am not a bat person.
We did detect that. There's that sort of feeling, Clive, from what you said. Then Stone Angtoft.
Oh, when you're at yes. Hunston, I was going to say, yes. There are lots and lots of memorials to the Higham family inside the church, and if you look on the outside the north side of the chancel at ground level, you'll see that there are three round tops to former Norman windows that are actually just put in when they rebuilt the church at a later date. They obviously took some of the old window arches, which are about like but are perfectly round, and they're carved with decoration, and they also just put them in at the base as part of the foundation. So there are three of them together, and one on its right. own. So again, nope. rare features.
So Stone Angtoft.
Stone Angtoft. You're looking at a really stonking church there.
It's very grand looking.
It is.
Perched slightly up on the hill.
Yeah, and you've got inside it are a whole series of Flemish wood carvings. Some of which disappeared and were ended up in somewhere in Europe and eventually
in the Netherlands, I think.
Yes, you're right. Yes. And then ended up back in the church again.
Right.
But wonderful wood carvings, lovely series of monuments, and interestingly, as you draw up, if you've got the energy at that time to walk up to the church, the wall outside, the actual churchyard wall, is comprised of lots and lots of bits of earlier church windows and tracery and decoration that the Victorians, obviously, when they renewed bits of the church, they thought, well, we'll reuse this. And so you get them all in the outside of the churchyard wall.
And then the last two, we better mention these. Jeff's Church in Pakenham.
Wow. Okay. Well, Pakenham, of course, now today is a cruciform church, looking like a cross. But in the medieval period, there was only one of those arms or transepts. The one on the south side is the only real one, as it were. But well, of course, the thing that it does have is that it has a central tower, again, and the tower, although it's been slightly altered, is in fact Norman. So right in the heart of that church, between the nave and the chancel, instead of just having an archway, there is actually a tower set there. And there are half a dozen or so other churches in Suffolk that have that central crossing tower.
And I hadn't realised that was a bit of a rarity.
Mm.
I just take it for granted.
And then, finally, if the knees and everything else is still working, we'll end up in Thurston.
Ah. Well, of course, Thurston is, as we've already mentioned, the sort of parallels that it has architecturally to St Mary's, where we are now. But Thurston was we've already mentioned at Stanton, the tower falling down in the early 20th century. Well, Thurston's tower came down in the 1860s. After evening service, everybody went home, and by the next morning, the tower had gone. People
in a storm or something?
No, it was just weak and just collapsed. And of course, there were all the village rumours about somebody had slammed the door as they went out, or you know, somebody, all sorts of different things. But it wasn't a lightning strike or anything like that. It was just a weak structure. Gosh. You know, obviously Jerry built in the 1450s or something or other. But the thing was that it fell down into the church and wiped out. I mean, destroyed the west end of the nave and the aisles and so on. Fortunately, there are photographs of it, and so they were able to rebuild the church on its medieval lines. But the lovely, again, the wonderful thing about Thurston, to make up for the fact that it's a mainly Victorian building, is the incredibly upmarket and very, very costly furnishings, things like the rood screen, things like the reredos, because in the parish, many wealthy families, including the Greens, and wonderful stained glass windows, some really, they're all Victorian, etc., but really high quality stained glass windows, particularly on the south side of the chancel, which I think one of them is inspired by a Norwegian painting, I think.
Good. Well, if we manage all of that,
I feel as if I've made the journey myself.
Well, there's still time to go and get the bike, right?
That has been magnificent. Thank you so much.
It's been absolutely wonderful. It gets us off to a fantastic start.
Yeah. This provided a superb context of what we're doing.
Good. Well, now,
now we've got to try and do
it. Now you've got to get the observer's book of Suffolk churches and tick off what you said.
We've got to be ticked off, and as others have to fill it in, we're going to have to do it.
But thanks for talking to me on this place. I've sat here.
Because you've got lots of formal stuff here. Yes, yes.
I've never had that kind of insight into it, so much appreciated.
Well, it's wonderful to see you again, Clive.
It's actually good to see you.
Well,
literally.
And how fantastic to have someone in Suffolk with this amazing knowledge of churches.
Wonderful.
Great.
Thank
all power to your knees, chaps.
Thank you.
Are you going to cite yourselves in here?
Oh, we are.